Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Good morning, Bryce Edwards from Victoria University. How are you, mate?
Hi, Johnny. I've got a bit of a cold, so excuse the croaky voice.
The listeners have been putting up with me with a croaky voice for the last 2 weeks, so I think we're all going to be okay, Bryce. I hope you feel better soon. This morning, we're going to start off with the government's shock changes in the health system with the replacement of Health NZ's board by Lester Levy. Is it Levy? Levi?
Yep.
And also the intention to reform the hospital system and find $1.4 billion in savings. Bryce, what are the key factors that led the government's decision to appoint a new commissioner at Health NZ?
Look, I think it's mostly about the money. So the government has inherited a health system that is in the process of reforms because, of course, the last Labor government centralised the DHBs or brought it into this new entity, Health New Zealand, and they say now that it's losing $130 million each month. It's in deficit, so this will end up being a $1.4 billion deficit at the end of the year, and that's a bit of a shock. It's kind of come out of nowhere, and so they've sacked the whole board that runs the hospital system, and they've appointed just one person, this Professor Lester Levy, and he's going to control the health system. He's going to try and get it back under financial control, back into surplus, and so it's
back into surplus.
Well, yeah. They want to stop losing money.
Yes.
They want to keep to their budgets.
Okay.
But of course, this raises a question of whether it's just a question whether the current budget just isn't enough.
Yes.
And so I've been looking at what health economists have been saying, crunching the numbers, and though I do think National, the Health Minister Shane Retty, has some good reasons to critique or want to change the current system, and thinks that the reforms haven't been right, and I think he might be right. When it comes to the actual funding, though, I'm not sure that they've got it right. So in the budget this year, there was a big increase in the health budget. The government was promising $16 billion extra over the next 3 years. But once you actually delve into it, look at the rate of inflation, growth in the population, demographics, increasing aging population, it's not actually keeping up.
Yeah.
So they needed a lot more to actually stand still. And so the current health system is having to recruit a lot of new nurses because they've been short in nursing throughout the hospitals, and that is really where this budget blowout has occurred, because they've actually been able to recruit a lot of those nurses.
Yes.
So I'm a lot more suspicious about this blowout now, having looked into it, and I think it's more just a case of the government needing to fund the health system more.
What would be some of the expected impacts of driving $1.4 billion in savings?
Well, no one knows.
Yeah.
And, you know, Lester Levy and the chief executive of Health New Zealand have been asked, you know, where's this money going to be saved? And they don't really seem to have any answers. They're very vague on it. But, you know, obviously it's going to have to be some staff cuts. It's going to have to be some declines in services.
Mm.
I mean, they're suggesting that, well, we can just make the current staff more productive.
Yes.
We can get rid of some of the middle managers.
Oh, my God.
But I'm not really sure that's plausible. And certainly Christopher Luxon, the Prime Minister, is pushing this idea that there's a bloated
bureaucracy. He's mentioned removal of layers of bureaucracy within Health NZ. What could we expect to see in the change in the organisation's management structure with comments like this?
It's a bit of a misnomer often to talk about the difference between front staff and the back-end office people. So those back-end bureaucrats are often the people that are running the system, that are assisting the doctors and nurses.
Yes.
So they're not really simply pen pushers or people just making decisions or sitting around. They're actually running the hospitals and running the services. So I think we should be suspicious of the Prime Minister on that one. Do actually need people keeping the services going.
What do you reckon the potential long-term implications of this ministerial intervention for the New Zealand healthcare system are on future reforms?
Well, they're talking about bringing a, more of an element of devolution. So, of course, under the old system that we had 2 years ago, we had all these 20 DHBs. So that was collapsed into one system. Now they're talking about spreading it out again, decentralising and giving more power out to four regions.
Yes.
So it's, I don't know, and I'm not saying that's wrong, but you can't just keep on moving things in and out and decentralising, then merging again. It's, I don't know, it's almost like we need Labour and National to work together.
Yeah,
and
why not?
Come up with a system that's going to be sustainable and ongoing.
Yes, yes. Now, on to the other big story of the week. Yesterday at 4 p.m, a Royal Commission report on abuse in state care was published. How significant is this Royal Commission report for New Zealand's approach to child welfare and state care?
Well, you know, this is a Royal Commission that's been going nearly, I think, nearly 6 years, and it's the biggest Royal Commission that New Zealand's ever had, dealing with, you know, huge complexities and going into the fact that this, over the last 60 years or so, we've had lots of vulnerable children in all sorts of state institutions, but also in faith-based institutions and schools where they've been abused, in some cases tortured, sexually abused, and treated very badly. And it is a real, as politicians said in the House yesterday in Parliament, that, you know, this is a real sort of shame for our country. And this report just details just how much everything has gone wrong and how much hurt and damage it's caused. So, you know, it's not just looking at the past. This report is giving lots of recommendations for the future. There's 138 recommendations for how the government can move forward and try and make things better. And I think, you know, so far we've seen all the political parties pretty much united on, you know, the same side on this report, an agreement and taking it very seriously. They might start disagreeing a bit more when it comes to the recommendations because they're a bit more controversial thought about giving compensation to victims, about bringing the treaty principles back into some of the ways that that the system deals with vulnerable children. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of argument and debate.
Yes. Now, I mean, this report covers from 1950 to 1999, but there's mention of recent instances of abuse. Why do you think these issues persist and what immediate action should be taken to address them?
Jeez, Johnny, that's a big question. Wow. Well, I mean, children have less rights and they have less power, so there's power imbalances, and, you know, we've just been complacent in the past about those things. And
yes.
We haven't taken children seriously, I guess.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we haven't believed them in the past when they have, you know, tried to, you know, call authorities in to say something's going wrong. I do think that's changed now. We do take children much more seriously.
Yes.
And we believe them when they have allegations, or at least we don't just immediately disbelieve them. So I think things will change, but whether there's enough money also in the system, because, you know, governments are struggling to pay for lots of things, whether they're willing to actually put the resources in to a lot of these care institutions is going to be a big question.
And Bryce, I apologise, it is only like 7:50 in the morning, but more questions like about accountability. I mean, how can the state and the faith-based institutions be held accountable for the historical and ongoing abuse of children and young people in their care?
I mean, this report is really, you know, the main way they can be held accountable for the moment. I mean, this is a 14-kilogram report. It just has so much detail, and it does bring to account those instances, and we've seen some of those in the report that have already tried to have it suppressed. So the Jehovah's Witnesses basically suppressed and not published, but they lost that battle, thankfully. And, you know, I guess there's a lot to digest in this report, and we're seeing that even some of the politicians from recent years are being pointed to as not really have been dealt with this properly. So people like Bill English and Helen Clark, when they've been Minister of Health, they've pushed these issues to the side. So, yeah, I think we're now seeing a bit of truth-telling, and, some of these people are going to have to,
Okay, Bryce, one last question for you on this. Okay, what are your thoughts on the government's announcement to make a formal apology in November, and how meaningful is this gesture for the survivors of abuse?
This is a no-brainer. I don't think anyone can disagree with this.
Yeah.
Christopher Luxon has he's handled this pretty well. He's spoken quite eloquently about this. I'm sure he'll give a very good apology later in the year, and I think all sides of politics will be united behind him. It's really just a question of what then changes in terms of real reforms.
I mean, on one hand, we've got the government setting up boot camps, so...
Yeah. So some of those words of apology might seem a bit hollow.
Yes.
If people think that some of the things the government are doing are actually perpetuating some of the damage.
Hey, Bryce, thank you so much for chatting to us this morning. I appreciate you taking the time with a chesty thing going on
Hey,
Legend, thank you so much. Hopefully next time we speak, the topics are slightly brighter.
Okay.
See you, mate.
Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.